So our next speaker is Peter Kiffney, who's an affiliate associate professor in the College of Forest Resources and a research ecologist in the Northwest Fisheries Center in Montlake. He'll talk to us about recolonization of the Cedar River, Washington, by anadromous fish. Build it, and they will come.
Thanks. Thanks, Bob. So fundamental to recovery efforts for threatened and endangered species is reintroduction, reintroducing them to their native habitat where they've been locally extinct. For example, Landsberg diversion here on the Cedar River has blocked passage of the sea run cutthroat, steelhead, chinook, and coho for almost 100 years. And in 2003, the city of Seattle, as part of their habitat conservation plan, built a fish passage facility so salmon can migrate upstream above this diversion and have access to relatively high-quality habitat in the city's drinking water watershed. So understanding the effects of this ladder, how successful this ladder is important because, as Speaker mentioned earlier, we have thousands of blockages across the Pacific Northwest that impede upstream migration to thousands of kilometers of habitat for salmon. And over the past 20 years, there's been thousands of projects to restore passage and costing hundreds of millions of dollars. Unfortunately, we have a very poor understanding of how successful these efforts are in actually restoring sustainable populations of salmon above the blockages. We also know little about the ecological effects that of reintroducing salmon will have on the resident species, resident food web, and ecosystems. So today I want to tell you a story about the Cedar River Watershed, which is a collaborative project that involving Seattle Public Utilities, NOAA Fisheries, and the University of Washington, where we want to try to address these knowledge gaps. So you thought you were here to hear a talk about salmon reintroduction. Actually, I'm a closet terrestrial ecologist, and the rest of the talk is going to be about wolves. But there actually is a connection between wolf reintroduction and salmon reintroduction. And if you go out to Yellowstone, biologists noted between 1927 and 1995, when wolves were locally extirpated from Yellowstone, that there was a lack of recruitment of aspen and cottonwood trees along the riparian zones. So after the reintroduction of wolves in 1995, biologists started to document recruitment of these trees. And it was hypothesized that the wolves, reintroduction of wolves into the park, has caused the elk to run around, not to reduce their grazing on these aspen trees, and lead to a trophic cascade where wolves are chasing the elk around, and as a result, they're not browsing down on these aspen and cottonwood, allowing for recruitment to happen. The point being is that when we reintroduce species into the native habitat, you can have some major implications for the food web. And this is the case for salmon as well. When you reintroduce salmon to a native habitat, they can have major changes, major implications for the food web, and at different levels of organization from genetic to ecosystem. So, for example, adults can die, decompose, provide nutrients. And then we have new species of juvenile fish that interact with resident fish species. So the point being that both salmon and wolves, when they're allowed to go back into the native habitat, can have major changes on the food web. So this is the Cedar River food web before salmon were allowed back up in 2003. Most of the energy is provided by primary producers, algae, which in turn feed primary consumers, mayflies, caddisflies, provide energy for terrestrial species when they emerge, for these intermediate predators, as well as for the top predator, aquatic predator in the system, cutthroat and rainbow trout. In addition, these intermediate predators provide food for an abundant and diverse group of piscivorous birds in the watershed. When you allow salmon back in, you fundamentally change the system. So now you have carcasses decaying, releasing carbon and nutrients that potentially promote productivity in the system that may influence growth, survival of these intermediate predators, and may also influence terrestrial species, such as and black bears and scavengers. And increased productivity here can influence the productivity and survival of these predators. In addition, you add two new species, Chinook and Coho, as well as two life history forms, sea run cutthroat and steelhead, that will interact with these resident species. So reintroducing salmon has fundamental changes, effects on energy flow and species composition. So with this in mind, we wanted to look at what are the dispersal and colonization patterns and reproductive success of anadromous fish into naive habitat. What are the ecological effects of reintroducing salmon on populations, communities, and ecosystems? And does providing fish passage establish a sustainable anadromous fish population in the Cedar River above Landsberg? Today, I'm going to focus primarily on dispersal and colonization patterns and this ecological effects question. So stay tuned for this one. So a number of predictions can arise from these general questions. One, it's a no-brainer. We may see an increase in fish densities after the ladder is installed because you're adding new species, relatively productive species at that. Or you may see no change. The system may be already saturated. Food and space are limiting. So resident fish that are there before the ladder may move down outside of the system because you have an influx of new competitors. There may be specific life stages that actually decline in density after the ladder is installed. So for example, juvenile trout may go down, their densities may decline because they're interacting with anadromous coho, or with coho or chinook. We also can predict that the productivity may change here on the x-axis in spawner density and a measure of productivity. The system may be starved for these nutrients, and at really low levels of salmon, you may see local increases of productivity, or be more of a threshold type of response. So with this background, we began a study in 2000 to look at the success of this fish passage facility and to document the effects of passing salmon above Landsberg. Here's the watershed here that we're working in. It's about 70 kilometers east of Seattle. This is where we get our drinking water. Here's Landsberg diversion, and it's blocked passage to about 27 kilometers of main stem and tributary habitat. The black bars represent geomorphic reaches. So these are changes in the channel confinement gradient substrate. The red bars represent natural barriers to upstream migration. These little blue ovals here are permanent pick tag stations. We have one at the mouth of Rock Creek, one in the main stem, one in a tributary down below Landsberg, and here we can detect them as they go out through the locks. So we can look at growth and survival of trout and coho from within the watershed with these pit tag readers. So we collected data for 2 years before the ladder went in, 2000 to 2001, looked at stable isotopes, water chemistry, and fish populations. The ladder was completed in 2003 with the first adults passed above in September 2003. We're now in our fourth year of data collection post-ladder. So just to give you some brief idea of methods, Carl Burton and Seattle Public Utilities are collecting data on identifying the locations of reds in the watershed. They float during the winter, and they spatially locate each red. This is important for two reasons. We can use these data to look at how red density correlates with changes in fish density. We also can use these data to isolate potential hotspots of productivity if the reds are aggregated in one area. George Pess is leading up efforts to pit tag juvenile coho as well as trout in the main stem and tributaries to look at individual growth, movement, and survival. And then we're using seasonal snorkel surveys in tributary and main stem habitat to quantify changes in fish populations in space and time. And then we can use these observational data to help develop hypotheses where we can test in these new experimental channels that are located on the floodplain in the Cedar River up near the diversion dam. Jeremy Cram just actually completed a master's project where he looked at the effects of salmon density on stream productivity in these channels. So some data. So these are data collected by Paul Falls and the Seattle Public Utilities at the Landsberg diversion. These are the number of adults passed above Landsberg since 2003. And you can note two things. One is that the Chinook adults pass above are relatively stable for the first 3 years, and they doubled here in 2006. For coho, we see a relative gradual increase in adults passed over time, passed above the dam over time. And overall, we see adult fish returning increasing at a rate of about 50 fish per year. What's also important to note is that these first 3 years are fish that are strained from below the diversion dam. So we're just moving fish around within the Cedar River rather than actually adding to the population. In 2006 is the first year of coho offspring from those original colonists that are returning. And in 2007 will be Chinook returning from these original colonists. And Joe Anderson is doing his PhD looking at the genetics of these individuals to document whether we're actually adding to the population or just moving fish around. So these are data collected by Carl Burton and the Seattle Public Utilities staff. These are from 2006 preliminary data. So you can note two things, that most of the reds are down in these lower two reaches. And this is similar for coho. They also primarily spawn in these lower reaches, and it's similar across years. About 80% of the reds are found in these lower reaches. You also can note that Chinook are relatively widely distributed throughout the main stem, and they're not spawning in tributaries. So the coho and Chinook are primarily spawning in the main stem. So are these adults coming up above Landsberg affecting fish populations? So these are fish densities, reach scale fish densities. So these are the individual reaches going from Landsberg to Cedar Falls, averaged across 2000, 2001, the first 2 years before the ladder went in, and 2004 to 2005, the two years of data collected after the ladder was installed. So the black bars before the ladder, the gray bars after the ladder, and these are mean densities of just trout before the ladder, of course, and then salmon and trout after the ladder. You can note two things, that there's a gradual increase in fish density as you move upstream before the ladder went in, and this pattern is reversed after the ladder, with highest densities in these lower reaches where most of the adults are spawning. So these higher densities are a result of two things, one being an increase in juvenile coho densities. They now make up about 30 to 50% of the relative abundance in these lower reaches, as well as a doubling in the densities of large trout that are moving into the system, either from below the dam or from upstream. So again, we can attribute these changes in density primarily to coho. So here I'm plotting here are the mean reach scale red abundances for coho, averaged across 2003 and 2005. And then the y-axis is the differences in fish density, mean fish density for those reaches after the ladder was installed. So you can see that coho red abundance is correlated with this difference in fish density. And so you can attribute primarily these changes in fish density primarily to coho, and that with every coho red, we're seeing an increase in fish density of about 0.01 fish per meter squared. So are these increases in the lower river in terms of fish density having any spillover effect into the tributary? Now, the primary tributary salmon have access to Rock Creek. 2 minutes left? Okay. And so we're going to focus on this lower reach right here. So here we have a mean and 95% confidence intervals for juvenile coho, trout greater than 80 millimeters, and juvenile trout and juvenile coho. So two things to note, that juvenile trout densities have declined from about 60% relative abundance to about 20%, while coho have increased over the same time period. So here we're comparing before the ladder went in to 2004, 2005, and 2006. There's been no change in large trout densities or trout abundance. So potentially competitive interactions occurring between coho and juvenile trout. Just to summarize, so we've seen an increase in fish densities in the main stem as well as an increase in coho densities in Rock Creek. In Rock Creek, there has been an increase in coho densities and a decline in juvenile trout densities, but no overall change in fish densities in Rock Creek. And this is primarily due to the decline in juvenile trout. So that the reintroduction of coho is potentially affecting juvenile trout abundances and potentially in Rock Creek at least reverting to what the system looked like before the ladder was installed. In terms of changes in productivity, and preliminary data from Jeremy Cram's experiment suggests that actually at very small amounts of salmon, you can see a measurable increase in productivity in these experimental streams. So just to sum up, that the ladder has allowed the reintroduction of salmon into the watershed. We're seeing populations, the coho dispersed throughout the watershed, and seeing changes at both the population and community level. And just would like people to stay tuned because this project has got some more interesting data to come down the pipe. I'd like to thank Seattle Public Utilities, the folks for logistical and technical support, people from NOAA Fisheries, and various funding sources. Thank you.